The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today it is Friday, June the 1st. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to get involved today. You'll find on the Normal News Weekly press release this week and our Normal News Weekly audio podcast, Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Well, we're coming up very, very quick on 1 year of podcasting here every single day. June the 5th, 2006 was our premiere show. And next Tuesday on June the 5th, 2007, we're going to have a special 58-minute best of episode. We're going to go back through some of the highlights of the last year of broadcasting, folks. It has been a huge success. 2.2 million downloads of the Audio Stash in the past year. We had 20,000 downloads of the 420 episode. You know, most weeks we're serving 50 to 70,000 downloads of this program. Thanks to everyone who has tuned into the Audio Stash on your cell phone, computer, or iPod. We've had over 300 guests here on the program. It really has been a great year. And we'll take a look at all of that on our Tuesday Best of episode, our 1 year anniversary here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Again, thank you all for tuning in here every single day. It really has been great. We got some important news today. We're going to follow up on the Ed Rosenthal trial. Let's get to that right away. We have a NewsPoint interview for you today, following up on yesterday's breaking news about the verdict reached in the Ed Rosenthal trial. Today we're going to speak with someone who was in the courtroom and followed the case closely, California Normal Director Dale Gerringer. Dale, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Hi, good to hear from you.
Very good to speak with you today, Dale. Now, tell us about the trial, and, you know, we'll discuss the verdict here in a moment.
Well, you know, this is the second trial like this, and basically it's governed by rules of federal procedure that pretty much preclude a fair trial. It's more like a Moscow show trial because the rule that the judge enforced was that there was to be no reference to California law or the fact that Ed was growing medical marijuana pursuant to local law, and specifically that he had a permit from the city of Oakland to do so. That just couldn't be referred to. This trial was a little bit different than the first trial in that the defense was able to get in mention, passing mention of medical marijuana on several occasions, partly because it was mentioned at, that he was supplying marijuana to places like the Harm Reduction Center, where it was stated that there were patients in charge. They also mentioned two or three other obviously medical cannabis facilities. And again, patients were mentioned in passing in that. And one of the witnesses, Rick Watts, who got dragooned into testifying, he had been subpoenaed to testify, didn't appear, so the judge put out a warrant for his arrest. The DEA hauled him into court. He was wearing a T-shirt saying defend medical marijuana there in court. So it was fairly evident that Ed's operation had something to do with medical marijuana, but the extent to which he had been permitted and the fact that he thought he was operating legally under California law, all of that was excluded.
Now, there were a number of really noted California medical marijuana activists who were briefly held in contempt of court during the trial.
Right. That was another new development. The government expanded its list of witnesses to include, actually about a dozen people, all of them active in the medical marijuana movement, who were, they wanted to testify, I think, to some sort of relationship with Ed. A bunch of them were dismissed by the court, but seven of them in the end ended up being taken to the stand and refusing to testify. They just said they wouldn't do it, which put them in contempt of court. The judge then went through this pro forma motion of determining whether he ought to send them to jail. And he asked them, well, now, if I send you to jail, will you testify? And they all said no, and thereby having determined that sending them to jail would do no good, he didn't send them to jail. Now, it's my understanding that they could still be, I guess, charged by the prosecutor for contempt of court after the fact, although that would seem highly unlikely, because this whole trial was highly unlikely. The judge never wanted it to happen, but the judge, I think, would be very unhappy to see any further proceedings in this case that he didn't want to go forward in the first place. The judge had, as you may recall, the first trial ended up in a conviction in which 8 of the 12 jurors recanted their verdicts after learning the truth that had been withheld from them at the trial. And so Ed was sentenced to a single day time served. The judge announced at the outset of this trial that that was his sentence. And so Ed would not be going to jail regardless of what happened. So you have here 12 jurors and two alternate jurors who were put through the ordeal of a two-week trial here for the only purpose of trying to put a black mark on next to Ed's name.
Now, Ed did win an appeal of his last conviction that described his prosecution as vindictive. But, you know, what is the motivation here on the part of the prosecution, do you think? Why pursue all this against Ed?
You know, we'll have to wait 50 years for the story all to be told, I think, in memoirs, of what was going on in the Justice Department's mind. The U.S. attorney here is not the most wild-eyed, crazy guy, despite his unpopularity with Mr. Rosenthal and his friends, George Bevan. But he made it clear that he had discussed the matter with his superior, who would be the acting U.S. attorney in Northern California. He did not know whether it went up to the Justice Department, and I think that's the crucial question. So nobody really knows who made the decision why.
Now let's talk about the verdict that was passed down this week by the jury. They did find him innocent on one of the charges.
I think that there was a split view on jury. There were at least one or two jurors who knew that this was a medical marijuana trial and had reservations about, I think, convicting him on that ground. And I suspect what happened, as often happens when you have a split jury like this, they often decide amongst themselves, well, let's acquit him on some charges and convict him on others. And the ones they convicted him on were all the ones in Oakland where he actually had a permit, but which were very clearly related to his property. They did not convict him they acquitted him on one charge, and they hung on a second charge, and those both had to do with a grow in San Francisco, where Ed's connection was not so clear and evident. And as I say, I think the jury just decided to acquit him on some charges to appease some jurors.
Also, Dale, I want to clarify something just as an aside here. Wasn't Ed deputized by the city of Oakland to grow medical marijuana at some point?
He was deputized by Jeff Jones of the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Co-op, who in turn had been authorized by the city of Oakland to deputize people as officers under the city of Oakland's cannabis ordinance. But he was never allowed to present that defense. And he was never really able to discuss, you know, how it was that the Oakland Fire Department came in and inspected his facility and didn't seem to see any problem there or report it to the police. None of that was able to be discussed.
Now, Dale, what is the future here for Ed? He appealed his last conviction and won. Did he mention that he has intentions to appeal this one as well?
Yes. I suspect he will. He's a stubborn man, and I don't know what the grounds for appeal might be. We shall see.
Also, Dale, what was your impression of the judge here, Charles Breyer? Again, Breyer had promised the prosecution he would not sentence any jail time should a conviction be found here, but what was your impression of how he ran the case during the course of the trial?
I think very fairly, to tell you the truth, given that he's constrained by federal law. I mean, there's binding precedents on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals telling him what can and can't be done in the trial, and he was just basically doing his job, you know, the way the law dictates, which is, unfortunately, you know, rigs the rules and the evidence against the defendant, but that's the way it is, and I think he did that job quite fairly. Myself and the DA, the prosecutor Bevin, well, you know, this did have the smell of vindictive prosecution. Bevin had been personally attacked a lot by Ed. Bevin is again, though, I sense a man just doing his job in all of this. He wasn't really over the top, and he doesn't have, you know, he isn't a drooling drug warrior or anything like that. He's just doing his job. So that's the way I read the government.
And what does this mean overall for those who cultivate medical marijuana in California? Is this just another indication that the federal government can and will prosecute when they choose, even though medical marijuana cultivation is legal under state law there?
Yeah, I think that's what it says. I mean, the federal government hasn't lost a case in against medical marijuana in federal court yet here in California, and they didn't want to lose this one, I suspect. But I don't think it has really huge implications, to tell you the truth. Everybody, I mean, forget about Ed. There have been dozens of other convictions out here, and a lot of them for jail time, and I think everybody realizes the situation.
Right, Odell. Well, I really appreciate you joining us here today on the Audio Stash to discuss this case.
You're welcome.
Thanks again, Dale. Dale Gehringer is the director of California Normal and attended the Ed Rosenthal trial. We have links to California Normal and Ed's website on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Here's a very apropos pod-safe song for us today from podshow.com. Here's a group called the Kings of Nuttin. They're from Massachusetts. Here's a track called Judge or Jury.
Well, I hope that they hang the jury, no verdict will be found. And I hope in time you'll forgive me when I stop coming around. You know I never cared much for the drama this city always seemed to hold. So I hope you'll forgive me, darling, when at times I seem so cold. Because he said, she said, someone said, there's a reward out for you. Now that he heard, she heard, they all heard, you gotta lock you up and sue. Cause the judge nor jury will change my mind on the lock and key. And I never saw the reason why. body in the hole. And I hope you won't get bored before the board grants my parole. You know I never cared much for the gossip. This city always seemed to live. So when the rumors get back to you, darling, I hope you'll forget and forgive. Because she said, someone said, there's a reward out for you. Now that he hurt, she hurt, they're gonna lock me up and sue. Cause the judge, your jury, won't change my mind on the lock and key. And I never saw the reason why we are far from this tragedy. And I've always tried to live my life. I wish others would do the same. So until I find my alibi, I guess I'll take the blame. Cause it's just all the same. Because I'm judge, not jury. It changed my mind on the lock and key. And I never saw the reason why we are one with the tragedies. And I've always tried to live my life. I wish others would do the same. So until I find my alibi, I guess I'll take the blame. Cause it's just all the same to me.
That was Judge or Jury from the Kings of Nuttin, hailing from Massachusetts. We have links to these guys on our website at normalaudiostash.com.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
I want to be famous. I want to wear minks and satins and pearls.
Fridays here on the Audio Stash, we take a look at famous folk who enjoy a token celebrity happenings with Steve Bloom from his site celebstoner.com. Steve, welcome back to the show today.
Hey there, Chris. What's up?
Oh, at the end of a short but busy week this week, man. Let's dive right into what has really been the celeb story of the week here, and that's Lindsay Lohan. She's been giving plenty of content away to the tabloids and mainstream media. You've been following her recent stumbles, falls, car accidents, and sleeping in the front seat photos at celebstoner.com. You know, but I have to ask, Steve, as someone who's been around a lot of celebrities and followed this stuff for years, what is it that causes behavior like what we saw with, you know, Belushi and Monroe, even River Phoenix? What is it? These celebs have it all. Money, fame, houses, cars, clout. What makes these folks essentially risk it all and risk their lives?
Well, I think, you know, they kind of have a bit of a death wish, it seems, in some cases, especially, you know, celebrities who use, you know, dangerous drugs, you know, drugs that can kill you. And I think sometimes celebrities, rock stars, people who are a little bit larger than life in the way they're perceived because of, you know, they're on the big screen, they're in front of you on a stage, they're athletes on, you know, in an arena, you know, they have very big appetites. They like to, you know, afterwards relax and sometimes relax, you know, by doing too much of something. In other words, they're going to do a lot more of this drug than the average person. Their appetites are just larger, and they think they can handle it all, and, you know, in some cases they can, or in some cases they learn the hard way and get over it. In some cases, the worst thing possible happens and they overdose. You know, when you're playing around with hard drugs and you're partying very heavily and you're very young and you think you're, invulnerable, you know, all of a sudden your world collapses on you when you overdose or when you get arrested and you go to jail for it, or, you know, obviously the worst possible thing that could happen, you would die. And, you know, there have been a lot of, you know, great artists, actors, musicians, people in American society who've passed away, you know, because of, you know, their inclination towards harder drugs. And that will, I'm sure, play into addictive personalities. You know, it's all available for you. You have plenty of money. People are always coming up to you saying, you know, let's do this, let's do that. And sometimes you just want to live up to that reputation. Hey, I am, you know, the person you think I am. I'm not going to say no. I'm not sober. That's boring. You know, I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be the wild party person, and I'm going to, you know, live up to your expectations. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, people around them oftentimes are the worst influences. You know, they don't really care. They just want to say, hey, I was out snorting coke with Lindsay Lohan, and here I offered her a lot, and I gave her some more, you know, because they can go back and tell their friends, hey, look what I did. You know, so it's cool for them, but ultimately, you know, it takes its toll on the celebrity. And so in her case, it's taking its toll. She's got to take it easy. She's got to step back and, you know, really concentrate on her career. career, you know, be a movie actress, you know, work towards that. She's always done fine, you know, when she's in most films. I mean, she's pretty highly regarded as far as Lindsay Lohan, in terms of the work that she's done, you know, Mean Girls and other movies that she's been in. So if she could just, you know, slow down a little bit, you know, take it easy, and, you know, life is there for her, you know, she's got a long, hopefully, life ahead of her, and, you know, don't think that you have to accomplish it all in, you know, in one weekend.
And to be clear here, Lindsay Lohan, unlike Paris Hilton, Lindsay is not known for smoking pot. She's into the truly dangerous stuff.
She doesn't have a reputation for being a pot smoker. Not to my knowledge. No photos have popped up, and I haven't really heard much about that. There's one photo that's floating around the internet where she was in a car where somebody else was smoking, but she wasn't doing the smoking. So you can't imagine that, you know, if she's hanging out in, you know, among druggy friends, you know, you could, you know, you can't imagine that marijuana is not around, you know, but it seems that, you know, clearly that's not her problem. Her problem is harder drugs than alcohol.
A few things more dangerous than alcohol out there. But on a higher note here, for sure, there was a big celebrity birthday this week. You've highlighted at CelebStoner.com. This week, actor, author, comedian, and Normal Advisory Board member Tommy Chong turned 69 years old, and anyone who's been around him recently, including myself, likely find it very hard to believe that he's quickly approaching 70 here. Tommy has an attitude and personality that remains youthful and energetic, and he's extremely active in performance and extremely active creatively.
You know, I mean, it's Tommy, and he's a great guy, you know, there's no question. And, you know, since he spent his time in jail, as you know, you've had him on the program, you know, he's become much more involved in the legalization movement. You know, he kind of stayed away over the years. Before that, he just didn't really, you know, see himself as an advocate. But once he was drawn into, you know, the drug war, you know, by going to jail for selling bongs interstate and being like the guy who they focused on for Operation Pipe Dreams, you know, the main, you know, like the big guy they went after, you know, to make that was Ashcroft's campaign against the paraphernalia industry. You know, they took Tommy down, they put him in jail for 9 months. You know, he took it, you know, he did it, you know, courageously. They tried to take down his wife and his son, and he basically took the charges, you know, for them, and decided not to really get into a big fight over it because he didn't want it to bleed over into his family, and just said, okay, I'm going to suck it up. I'm going to do 9 months in jail. And a lot has come out of that for Tommy. I mean, Tommy wrote a book, The I Ching, which is out now. He's been out there touring as he normally does, doing comedy. He's been involved with Normal, as you say, and, you know, speaking more and more and speaking out. So, you know, the love is even greater and deeper for Tommy than it ever was. I mean, even if Tommy never said boo for legalization of marijuana, here's a guy who's an icon from the 70s and the 80s, the movies that he appeared in and he directed, Up in Smoke and, you know, Cheech and Chong's next movie and Still Smoking and Nice Dreams. You know, this is kind of like the foundation of the Stoner movie was created by Tommy Chong and Cheech Marin, essentially Tommy, because he was the writer and the director. And he was that guy. You know, if you look at those movies, it's funny, I was just watching next movie. He was on Comedy Central last night, and I was watching it again. I hadn't seen it in a while. And you kind of see the distinction. You know, the Cheech never really smokes a lot, but Tommy's always got the huge fat bomber in the front seat of the car smoking like crazy. And there's another scene in the movie where there's a comedy, they're at a comedy club, and Tommy sits in the middle of the comedy club. Remember, this is 1980, smoking a huge bomber throughout the whole scene. You know, now these days, of course, you can't even smoke, you know, inside, but much less, you know, smoke a joint, and much less one that's like 10 times the size of the average joint. And this is kind of like the humor that they played into, you know, throughout, you know, their run. But Cheech was never this big smoker. Tommy was always the big smoker, and it's kind of true. You know, they really, I think, played to their real characters at that point. You know, Tommy always was the guy, you know, with the big joint, with the guy who was, you know, where's the weed? Let's smoke, you know. And he played that character very well. And years later, the government treated him as if, you know, the character was real. Whether it was or not, they wanted to, you know, send them to jail because they believe, you know, that he'd been advocating for marijuana as a actor for all those years, which was pretty, you know, pretty absurd. Yes, you know, he may believe those things, but yet then again, it was his actor who was playing these roles, him as an actor, you know, playing this character, the man, or they, as he called himself, or Anthony Stoner, which is his name in Up in Smoke. So, you know, it's been a long, interesting trip for him. I mean, he goes back to, you know, being born in Canada, coming up up through the comedy scene in Vancouver, meeting Cheech actually up there. And Cheech was 8 years younger than Tommy, so he kind of came along as like the younger brother guy. And they, you know, formed the, you know, one of the great comedy teams of all time, whether they're stoners or not. They're kind of like the Abbott and Costello of pot. You know, they're just hysterical. And I look sometimes at Cheech as kind of like almost a Groucho type character, where Tommy is a little more laid back. Groucho Marx, you know, he's just hysterically funny throughout. He just, you know, nonstop giggles. And Tommy's more like, yeah, man, kind of stuff. But, you know, all that characterization that Tommy did, it took, you know, Sean Penn, you know, his Spicoli character and other characters later on to sort of play off of the Tommy Chong character to create, you know, the modern day stoner characters that you see in movies all the time now. So Tommy really started it all. For better or worse, whether you like these movies or you don't like the movies, you like the nature of the stoner movie, or you don't like the type of stoner movies that, you know, that Cheech and Chong created, most people do, you know, but he really started this. He got the ball rolling, and all these years later, with all the movies Hollywood's making these days, they're all based on the Up and Smoke Cheech and Chong formula. So, you know, he's been there, done that, and not to mention, you know, put out an album called Big Bamboo with a huge rolling paper in it. So, I mean, back in the time when, you know, when sort of everything was sort of new in the marijuana world, you know, Cheech and Chong were the first, the one and the only to really storm ahead. You know, nobody else was kind of like them. There's really no team that rivals them, even to this day. Could you think of a comedy team, a stoner comedy team that rivals them? Maybe the Marijuana Logs, the three guys now, but, you know, but again, there's no real Cheech and Chong. Every once in a while you have a, you know, you have a movie like Half Baked with Dave Chappelle and Jim Brewer, you know, as a great team, but that doesn't last. You know, Cheech and Chong lasted.
And, you know, who's carrying on the stoner comedy tradition? You mentioned some of those individuals and troops, but does anyone really incorporate pot into their routine or their work the way Tommy did so consistently? Really is an integral part of their act and their onstage persona?
A good question. Probably not, except for some of the guys we've just mentioned, guys like Doug Benson, Tony Kameen, Arch Barker from the Marijuana Logs. They've sort of taken, you know, they've sort of taken it passed on a little bit. You know, Tommy Chong has been in that show as well, too, and they've, it's a little bit, you know, been passed on to them. But, you know, no, I think the time is just different now than it was then in terms of, like, just somehow or other hatching this very unique, you know, duo that, now, you know, you, again, every once in a while, you'll see a really good team in a movie, Harold and Kumar, those two guys, and they're going to come back with a follow-up. You know, I understand there's a follow-up to the movie Super Troopers, which is a very popular stoner movie, you know, and there'll be follow-ups to that. But, you know, there aren't the individual guys that really stand out as much. You know, you're not going to really look at Cal Penn and John Cho, who are a funny team in Harold and Kumar, as, you know, Cheech and Chong. Those guys just are not at that level. They're not comedians at that level. They're good actors, and they play good, you know, stoner characters in those movies. But, you know, they don't cover all the territory like Cheech and Chong did. I mean, Cheech and Chong were actors. They were stand-up comedians and even, you know, musicians, especially Tommy, who came up originally as a guitarist in a band in Vancouver. So, I mean, they kind of, like, you know, covered it all. And, you know, very diverse, you know, personalities and talents, whereas today, you know, either you're an actor or you're a comic or you're a musician, you're not going to be all three.
Well, we all wish Tommy a very happy birthday, and for those who wish to give Tommy some birthday wishes in person, you can see him at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminars taking place next Friday in beautiful, marijuana-friendly Aspen, Colorado. That's on June the 8th. Steve, many thanks for joining us here again today.
All right. Keep up the great work, Chris.
Thanks again, man, and have an awesome weekend. Steve Bloom keeps us up with the celebrity news and famous folk who enjoy a toke at his website, celebstoner.com.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Strop, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
With so much going on out there today, folks, I thought it was time for the soothing sounds of Angie B. Here she is from podshow.com. We have links to her on our website at normalaudiostash.com. Was Angie B right here on the Audio Stash for some soothing sounds here at the end of the day today. We have links to Angie up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. We found that track up at podshow.com. We always have links for more information about the artists we play here on our website. Check it out. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. If you listen to the Audio Stash, vote for us at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. Everyone have a fun summer weekend out there, and we're back at 4:20 on Monday. We'll be right back.